I can't recall a time when housing supply was such an issue in this country. Though maybe our first guest this morning can. One of the knock-on effects of the pandemic era has been a choking off of new housing supply, which is kind of odd when demand is sky-high, interest rates are low, and suburbs seem to be popping up around Borloo quicker than McDonald's and Bunnings can put new outlets in them. Curtin University Faculty of Business and Laws Professor Stephen Rowley recently collaborated on research released today by the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute that went in search of the stumbling blocks for new development and found local government and their tinkering to be one of the major hindrances. Joined on the phone now by Professor Stephen Rowley. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Well, what is preventing developers from delivering new housing supply?
Look, the biggest factor is the market. You need strong market conditions to make development profitable. And if you don't get those, developers don't make a profit, so they don't develop. So it's as simple as that. The big issue we've got at the moment is rising construction costs. So that has an impact on your profitability. So developers stop providing new housing.
So in other words, we have sky high demand, just not at the price.
Well, look, it's been a really interesting situation in Western Australia the last few years. We've had a period of declining prices, but recently, the last couple of years, prices have gone up, so that's good news for developers. But at the same time, the last 12 months or so have seen these incredible rises in construction costs. So construction costs have risen so much that it's now getting to a point where it's just not profitable to build.
So what can be done then to boost supply, first of all, in the short term, if we have this short-term supply issue with the construction products?
Yeah, so we've had a lot of new supply coming through and we'll continue to have it come through as a result of the stimulus the government introduced as part of COVID. And that will feed through over the next sort of 12 months or so. And then I think we're going to have a big gap. One of the big gaps will be in sort of apartment-type development because of that construction cost issue. So look, the last thing we want government to do is put in another stimulus because it just completely distorts the market. So unfortunately, we're going to have to sort of sit and wait until conditions improve and costs start coming down. I mean, government can start building directly, of course, and take the opportunity to increase the supply of social housing, which certainly our state government is doing. But you've just got to get those conditions to be profitable for a developer, and that takes, unfortunately, time. So we're going to have this period where we have quite limited new supply going forward, which is not good for anyone looking to buy or rent a house.
Well, this is, I mean, one of the things that your research uncovered, wasn't it? That those short-term solutions, like financial incentives, just did not work, that the government needs to be involved in actually making the bricks and mortar come together.
Yeah, these sort of incentives that are provided to first home buyers and all these boosts and grants and so forth, yeah, they do end up making housing more expensive. So it makes it even more difficult for those that were get the timing a bit wrong and aren't eligible for those sort of incentives. So look, the view is that government has to deliver more directly. It needs to build more social and other affordable housing products to help those on low incomes. It can't rely on the private market to deliver products that are affordable for those on low incomes. So, yeah, much more intervention is required by government.
Well, I mean, the private market itself has been struggling with the number of building companies going into liquidation, particularly on the east coast of late.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a result of costs increasing. So as a builder, there's a limit to what you can do in terms of passing increased costs onto the consumer. So the builder has to then absorb those increased costs. And we've seen the result of that. A lot of builders going under. So, yeah, very strange times that you've got this massive boom driven by these government incentives, but builders are going under. There's something, you know, very wrong about the structure of an industry where that happens.
Have we ever faced these sorts of conditions previously? And if so, how do we find a way out of it?
Well, I think the construction cost rises are unique. We have had periods of increased cost, but this has been quite remarkable. But yeah, I mean, we've had periods of very strong supply, and in Western Australia, sort of around 2013 to 2015, we had record supply. But the last few years have been absolutely dire. So it does go through cycles because of those market conditions, and you know, we're seeing the outcome of that now, really, in terms of our rental market, because it's so little out there, and that's partly a result of a lack of new supply. But we've also seen, say, the last couple of years, rents increasing because of that lack of new supply. So, you know, there is a sort of lag effect here, and my concern is that we're going to have a period over the next sort of 2 years or so where we build very little, and that's just going to make things even worse in parts of the market.
Well, it's going to make things very worse, isn't it? If we already have a labour supply shortage and we're expecting to bring labour in, you've got to house these people somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real crisis in the rental market, that lack of stock. And what we're seeing is quite a lot of landlords are actually selling up. They've had a pretty tough period the last 5 or 6 years. And so they're getting out. So there's even less stock on the market to rent. So, yeah, where do people coming to the state actually live? And, of course, those already here, prices or rents are rising, and it makes it even less affordable. So, you know, there's just a limit to what government can do in the short term to increase the supply of rental. The big hope was all this new house building resulting from the stimulus would take quite a lot of renters out of the rental market and into ownership, freeing up a bit of stock. But that's not really happened yet because of all the delays in construction costs. And with landlords selling up, we've seen the availability just drop. And so it's a perfect storm in so many ways.
What is mandatory affordable housing contributions? I mean, how do they work, and how can they deliver a significant supply of affordable housing?
Well, look, my view is that if we're really serious about increasing the amount of affordable housing, not only does government have to spend more, but the private sector needs to deliver as well. And there are many other countries where the private sector deliver affordable housing contributions as part of market developments. It's difficult. It's complicated. The development industry don't like it. But basically, how it works in the UK is if you've got a development of, say, 100 units, maybe 20 of those would be required to be affordable. So the developer will have to fund that through either a reduction in the price they pay for the land or through their profits. So it is a very controversial scheme. And we've had in West Australia, the Metropolitan Redevelopment Authority, before they were merged with Development WA, had a 12.5% affordable housing target, mixed success there. But it's about ensuring the private sector comes to the park and delivers some social infrastructure as part of their development.
Which is interesting because on one hand, you're recommending that there's government involvement to encourage affordable housing. But on the other, you also noted that local governments getting in the way seem to mess with affordable housing.
Well, local governments can be problematic, particularly if they're a bit anti-development. So previous research we've done has found that those local governments that have been successful in delivering new supply have been very proactive and are really keen to work with developers to deliver that housing, whereas you've got others that just are not interested at all. They don't want new development in those locations, so make it quite difficult for developers. I mean, there's not many of those, but delays in the process, increased costs, infrastructure contributions all have a negative impact on supply. So local governments have some power to try and speed up the process to reduce the cost of the process, and that would help developers in times where supply is very weak.
I recently heard an economist referring in particular to the Perth housing market, that we were kind of fooling ourselves, that it was a bunch of people that believed they were wealthy selling expensive properties to each other, and that the wealth wasn't even there. Do you see the housing market, particularly that in Perth, as being overinflated compared to the world market of real estate?
Well, Australia generally is expensive compared to international standards. I mean, we're more, if you take price-to-income ratios as a measure of affordability, we're far more expensive than the UK and the US and quite frankly, most parts of the world. It's only places like Hong Kong and a few others that are more expensive. So I think if you look at Perth compared to Sydney or Melbourne, we're actually quite affordable. Of course, it varies depending on what area you're living in. So a price-to-income ratio might be about sort of 12 or 14 in Subiaco, but Kalgoorlie is about 3. So massive variations. But no, I don't think we're, certainly compared to the rest of Australia, ridiculously unaffordable. Yes, we're unaffordable by international standards, but, you know, it could be a lot worse here.
But that being driven up, if you look at the situation this morning just announced where we have people learning how to drive dump trucks being paid over $110,000 a year. Are these sort of high wages in those sort of jobs forcing up the real estate pricing?
Oh, anything where income increases is going to have a knock-on effect to the housing market. And the Perth housing market has been driven in many respects by the strength of the resources sector. When we see strong price growth, it's generally because the resources sector is very strong. But we've got to remember that there's only small numbers in terms, if you take retail, for example, much, much greater numbers of people work in the retail sector compared to mining. Mm. So, yes, the very strong mining sector when it comes to wages, but it's a very big housing market and there are lots of other professions where you're not getting paid that much. So, it can distort markets and seeing what's happened in places like Karratha and Port Hedland where prices just shot through the roof in various periods of time. But I think we overestimate the impact of mining wages on the overall Perth market.
Well, Professor Rowley, thank you very much for joining us on the record this morning to talk about the Perth housing supply.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
That is Professor Stephen Rowley from Curtin University. Recently completed some research into the housing supply that, the research was co-generated with the University of South Australia, University of South Queensland and the University of Adelaide and released by the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. If you just go online and type that institute in there, you'll soon find the research.